You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 196.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. Joined today by Aaron. How you doing?
Good as always.
This
glad
is another late night chat. And I couldn't focus at all today because I went to the gym for the first time in a long time. I know we're not supposed to get into banter at the beginning because people are going to always say, when you get into the meat, but in the, what is this, morning radio? But I'm sorry, I've got to get into this stuff.
Well, it is technically morning.
Yes, yes. It's very late in the morning, isn't it? Or late in the early, in the, I don't even know.
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah, no, I joined this new gym in town. In Salem, New Hampshire, and I did one of the courses today after a while, and kicked my ass, I'll say that. I thought I was fine going through it, but then it was just the rest of the day that that was a little off. And then, as you know, I have a lot of things to take care of around the house, which, you know, the bedroom's all musky, and the table chairs wobble. I don't know what to do, so I'm not... I guess I'm not very good at the home engineering type aspect of
bits and
building
pieces.
Stuff. Yeah, well, I'm trying. All right. So today's going to be, well, it's going to be maybe one of our news update shows, which, you know, we'll go through several stories one after the other and react. That's always fun. I looked at the tech news in the New York Times this month. It is a bore. So my takeaway from the New York Times is that there's a lot on social media censorship in foreign countries, and that's bad because of censorship. And then there's a lot of lack of censorship in this country leading to misinformation, and that's also bad. So that was my takeaway from the New York Times.
I thought everything was awesome.
Yeah. Also, I realized that there's no actual tech in the tech news. It's just about the big tech companies, which is important stuff. We talk about it a lot. But, you know, isn't there supposed to be like real technology that they're talking about sometimes? I don't know. I would have hoped so. Sometimes. Yeah, okay.
It's very much the business of tech, I think, has been more the focus there. But yeah, I don't know how that compares to standard expectations.
So anyway, I went to the science section instead. I'm still in the New York Times. This is the only one from the New York Times, I promise. I do check their pages because sometimes there's a gem in there. And this one's somewhat amusing. This is a story about the Vikings. Yeah, it's our friend the Vikings, because we've already done an episode on the Vikings, I think. Last time we spoke about them.
Not the Minnesota Vikings, but these are Canadian Vikings, right?
Episode 138. Well, immigrants to Canada. Well, but the ones we spoke about in episode 138 was that it was a study on their DNA and how like diverse they are.
Right.
And for some reason, there is this recent cultural interest in the Vikings. I'm not sure why. There was a book that was recently published called Viking Heart by Arthur Herman that I believe is getting some traction. The Epic Rap Battles just had one featuring a Viking. So I see Vikings everywhere. I don't know if that's a coincidence or if there's actually some interest in it recently.
I haven't been seeing it that much. And I almost thought that Vikings were kind of past their prime because there was some... television shows that were very Viking centric, but they've more or less run their course at this point. So I thought we were past that, but maybe we're going to see a Viking revival.
Right, right. Well, I think it's more historical interest in the Vikings now, more of a kind of learning about them type sense. But this is about, you know, figuring out when the Vikings actually made it to Canada, which we know that there was a settlement in Newfoundland. Just reading from the articles, 6 decades ago, a husband and wife team of archaeologists discovered the remains of a settlement on the windswept northern tip of Newfoundland. The site's 8 timber-framed structures resemble Viking buildings in Greenland, and archaeological artifacts found there, including a bronze cloak pin, are decidedly Norse in style. Scientists now believe that this site, known as, and this is in French, so I'll try my best, Lanzo Meadows, was inhabited by Vikings who came from Greenland. To this day, it remains the only conclusively identified Viking site in the Americas outside of Greenland. So
It's surprising that the Vikings would give a French name to their settlement.
Well, no, I don't think. Yeah, that was in this. They uncovered the sign, and it was like, you know. Well, anyway.
Vive la France!
Yeah. I love how this show goes from like just sort of you know, hyper intellectual, where I'm just going over some math thing, to like just goofing around, which is I guess the mood we're in today. But anyway, this is actually very, you're going to learn some serious stuff in this article, I promise. I'm going to continue. All right. So they didn't know when the Vikings were in Canada. And that's kind of very interesting. Like, how long ago did they arrive? You know? So, according to paper recently published Wednesday in Nature, scientists presented what they think are new answers to this mystery by analyzing the imprint of rare solar storms in tree rings from wood found at the site. Scientists have decisively pinned down when Norse explorers were in Newfoundland. They did their calculations. It came out to AD 1021, exactly 1,000 years ago.
This is very convenient.
Does that make you doubt it? Or
it raises a question of, like, I know with radiocarbon dating, which is not exactly what this is, but I would imagine it's in a similar vein, that there's a degree of certainty that goes along with that. And so I, not knowing much about the details of this method they're using, I'm curious if they were actually able to nail it down to a particular actual, you know, year plus or minus one, or if they were able to get it, you know, within 20 years, and it just was convenient to round it to a nice even 1,000, since we are in the year 2021.
Well, so if you dive into this, and I learned about this thing, it's called they don't actually know where the ring starts, so they have to line it up with some known events, and there's something called the Miyake event. Also, if you go on Wikipedia, it's called the Charlemagne event, because it's something that happened in the year 775. There was some kind of event to make the rings look different, some kind of solar storm events, something radioactive maybe. I don't know how it worked. But the theory was it was a supernova, because there's something called the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, which I almost imagine is like kind of a ye old newspaper from 775. But that's not, it's ye more old of
tabloid.
A
tabloid.
Yes, it's a tabloid. No, I looked it up. It looks like more of a manuscript from like 100 years later, detailing information about the different years. It makes some reference to a red crucifix in the heavens that year. So they theorize as a supernova. So basically they can tell, which is really cool. They could look at this wood and they can tell when that was, and then they can, they can move forward however many years. And it sounds like it's pretty accurate. I'd be surprised. It could be a year or two off, but I don't think it would be 20 years, because if it was 20 years, they wouldn't be like, well, this thing happened in 775. And, you know, that's pretty neat. And so this is something that, you know, I guess you could only do with what, like when the wood was chopped or, understand.
So rings would continually to be accrued until the tree stopped growing, and
gotcha.
And if it died of natural causes, then presumably, you know, it wouldn't be preserved unless we were talking like petrified wood here. So it seems likely that, you know, the final rings were when it was chopped down for building their structures. And it seems unlikely that that there was, you know, a large lumber yard where it had been curing for decades, and they bought it off the locals or anything like that.
What about carbon dating? Like, how does that work? I'm not assuming you know, but is that similar to this?
I have not read up on it recently, but my understanding is that there are different isotopes of carbon, and depending on the ratio of, I think it's carbon 12 to carbon 14, you can determine how long ago that formerly living material ceased to continue its regular respirations.
So it's something it's the countdown from when something stops respirating.
Right. Yeah. So I think I think there's naturally a certain amount of carbon 14 and it decays into carbon 12 or maybe it's vice versa. And that ratio can tell you roughly how long ago that occurred. But right. I think, that's the very, you know, high level version of it. There are various types of radiocarbon dating, which have, you know, different levels of precision and are viable for different age ranges. And you know, you, like I said, come with different levels of precision. So, that's part of why I was a little surprised that they could narrow this down to a single year, because I don't believe you can do that with radiocarbon dating. That usually it's to a much, much wider potential band. But if you're doing things like, you know, was this fossil from the Cretaceous or the Jurassic, then you're working with tens or hundreds of millions of years for each of those periods anyway. So you're not too worried about whether you're within plus or minus 5 years.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So we learn about dating here, and we learn a little bit about the Vikings. That's cool. Well, you mentioned there were a lot of headlines about who discovered America. Yeah, that gets kind of
right. Well, and I wonder if that's almost entirely due to the fact that we just we recently celebrated Columbus Day, in some places observed as Indigenous Peoples Day, and in Canada observed as Canadian Thanksgiving. So there's been a lot of you know, Columbus bad discussion going on, and so some people I think were overjoyed to find out that, oh, Columbus wasn't actually the first person, the first European to discover the Americas, which it sounds like from reading into the details on some of these articles that maybe there was no.
Didn't we all learn this very early on?
That was my thought. Yeah. I thought it was pretty widely accepted that the Vikings got here first. There's the complication that it wasn't the settlement didn't survive. So it wasn't like Columbus arrived and there were a bunch of, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed guys sitting on the beach, playing volleyball and offering him a drink.
And it didn't actually cause Europe to start.
Right.
Coming
there's,
in droves.
There's a lack of reliable documentation from those Viking settlers. And it sounds like this is the first confirmation of you know, confirmed dating that lines up with that story, but it seemed like I am very smart take to be, oh, this disproves that Columbus discovered America, because I think we kind of all knew that already. But maybe not.
I think it's about the impact of the Columbus voyage more than the actual first aspect of it.
Right. And I don't want to drag us into the politics of
right. I'm just saying
was
impact.
Columbus
impact is
good or
is
bad.
Neutral.
Should we be celebrating Columbus Day or not? But yes, the Viking settlements did not stick, and it did not result in a large European population, or a large migration of Europeans to the quote unquote New World, in the way that the Spanish expedition in 1492 did.
Here's something I always wonder about, and I know I think I had a discussion about with someone about this who's more knowledgeable than me, because I can't really work this out. But like, it's possible that other people made this transatlantic journey in either direction before Columbus, and aside from the Vikings, it's just nobody knows about it because it was a one-off, you know, thing. However, is that really possible? I mean, if something like that happened, would it have had to have been a large, well-funded effort, or could it have just happened with, you know, somebody getting off course and then through some stroke of luck surviving the journey? I don't know the answer to that, but it's fun to think about sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and I think, we lose track of how small Columbus's expedition actually was. I mean, yes, it was three ships, and yes, it was funded by the crown, but these were relatively small small ships, and you know, at least the elementary school version is that you know, he was looking for China, and lucked out that there was something else in between there, because he certainly wouldn't have made it. but yeah, there's a certain amount of luck and maybe not literally being blown off course, but arriving not exactly where you expected, that I think some of these Viking expeditions on the North Atlantic may have had similar impacts. I don't know that they were necessarily looking for the New World as much as they were, you know, just trying to leapfrog from, you know, Greenland and Iceland to see what else they could find out.
What's the next Greenland?
Yeah.
You know, if you like Greenland, there's got to be a greener land. There's a wine land. There's Iceland, and then there's Greenland. And then if you think Greenland is not good enough, there is a wine land.
I mean, not unlike American settlers who kept moving further and further out west into the interior, just a lot wetter.
Right. Yeah, yeah. All right, so back to the present.
Moving on from the Vikings.
Back to the present. No, okay, so this is an update from Brian Armstrong, CEO of Coinbase. He tweeted, "It's been about a year since my mission-focused blog post. It wasn't easy to go through at the time, but looking back, it turned out to be one of the most positive changes I've made at Coinbase, and I'd recommend to others." So this sounds very, if you don't know the backstory, this just sounds very, you know, just a very... Well,
and we did talk about this on the show, didn't we?
Yes,
what episode was that?
It was 139. Actually, that's fascinating. So the Vikings was 138, right?
Huh.
And this story was 139. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. So it's almost like we're doing like year updates on things that we did a year ago. So, okay, here's what happened. A year ago, Brian Armstrong is the CEO of Coinbase, a very big public company that you could keep, you could store your Bitcoin and Ethereum and all
that. When
you
say big, in terms of staff, they were not that large.
No, in terms of staff, they're not that large. Okay, but they're a public company and very valuable. High valuation, I guess, billions
of dollars. Right, it's yeah. Not a, you know, rinky-dink, you know, garage startup.
It's not Facebook either. It's not, you know, or Twitter.
right.
Yeah, it's got. I think it's like the staff will know each other. It's probably hundreds, not thousands and thousands. But anyway, they published a blog post last year saying that the company will be mission focused. So, okay, that sounds like bland corporate speak. You're like, why do I care? You know, if someone comes out, we're mission focused. It's like, you know, if you get a letter, it's like, throw it in the garbage. But it was actually very controversial because it didn't allow employees to use the company as a vessel for their political activism, which is what they had been doing.
Right. And to think back to a year ago from now,
it
wasn't quite the peak of the BLM movement, but it was very much swimming in that
current. Oh, yeah, that's true.
This occurred. I would expect, I don't remember how much detail we went into at the time, but I expect that certainly played a significant role in driving this decision. Is that and other events and movements politicizing the workplace?
Yeah, so it was a huge liability for them. There's a big hit piece in the New York Times that claims that Coinbase is a big culture problem. And, you know, that's what, you know, people tell me sometimes, oh, Coinbase, don't they have a cultural problem there? Like, you know, because people, it's just sort of, that's the rumor now, right? Because they created these rumors. But yeah, I could see what they mean. People using the company as a vessel for their political activism, like Foursquare, where I just left, there's a Slack channel called Radical Book Club, where, you know, as far as I can tell, it's employees who are, yes, they read books, but they're basically using the company social network and at times like the company products and mouthpieces to figure out how can we bring socialism to the world or equity or whatever it is. And it's like, huh, that's not really what I want to see, but I got to see that. And sometimes even like the COVID channel and the New York City channel, they get very political on Slack. But I mean, I guess I recorded some podcast episodes in the office, so I did advocate for some positions there and technically use it. But I feel like it's a little different because that's kind of more private versus that was some of the stuff got into like, I have to tell every coworker about it and we've got to like put this in company communications and things like that. So bigger deal, I think. So anyway, how's it going? He claims it's working well. I say he claims it's working well. I think he's probably right, but let's see what he let's see what he says. He says that the team, a year on, the team is just as diverse as it was before, if not more. And usually when they say their diversity stats, this is something all the tech companies have now. It's the diversity stats is almost always race and gender. It's not the Steve Jobs type of diversity that we talk about in episode 194, right, which is like diversity of experience. But he said,
but even given that, I think it's an important data point, because when this was happening, the accusation was that this is going to cause an exodus of everybody except the white supremacists who want to keep working there. And
the one white supremacist who's closeted and works there. Yeah,
I think we can say that assuming that his stats are accurate, which I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt there, that's provably has not happened.
Yeah. Yeah, he said he got a positive reaction from the employees. He did say something. He said like a lot of people spoke to him in private saying, thank you for doing this. This was getting really annoying, which I can totally see. He also put something in there about the heroic efforts of the employees who stayed and for a short time had to pick up the slack by working extra hard, like nights and weekends. And I'm like, ah, that doesn't sound like fun. okay, maybe it's always a little, but okay. Thank you for doing that, I guess.
Do you recall what the attrition rate was? Because the other big piece of this was that when they made this announcement, didn't he offer a pretty, generous or at least a very reasonable buyout package to anyone who wanted to leave, or am I confusing this with the Basecamp
situation? No, I think he did too. I think it was like 6 months.
Yeah, that was my recollection.
That was mine too. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that was. And I think they lost maybe 5 to 10%.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember what the percentages was. And
yeah. They got them back.
Losing 5 to 10% will certainly have an impact, especially in the midst of the pandemic when things were probably already a little bit tight to begin with. But it certainly could have been and was forecasted to be a lot worse by all the commentators looking at the scenario there.
It's interesting. I feel like all the times that I have these big disagreements at work, it's not like the leadership says do X and I'm like, I don't want to do X. I want to do Y. It's more like the leadership is vague, but they have a certain mission. And then middle management says do X. And I'm like, no, I think what they actually want us to do is Y. So that's what I'm doing. So that's where a lot of the fighting comes in. And so I think that by cleaning this up, they really clarified for people what they're supposed to be doing. And I think that really helps. Yeah, there's that. I'm glad we were we were curious last year as to how this was going to turn out, and so far actually looks pretty good. And the first month it looked kind of rough. It looked like they were getting hit on by the New York Times and all that. So it turns out, don't be afraid of the New York Times as much as it could be scary if they're coming after you.
So the other one to watch at the 1 year mark will be see, like we said with Basecamp, how they're faring.
Yeah, that was tougher.
Yeah, that felt a lot more in the public eye and more turbulent. But again, we'll see how that shakes out. The other speculation we had when this happened with Coinbase and again with Basecamp was how many other companies are going to follow suit. Will the fact that they've been able to pull this off and at least in the case of Coinbase, it seems to have been a successful, positive outcome for them. Will others follow that lead, follow that signal? I'm not aware of any major cases of that happening other than these two. But that doesn't mean that it isn't happening. It just means it hasn't made the news. It hasn't resulted in New York Times op-eds.
It would have to be like a... you're right. If it's just these two and then we go several years and nothing happens, then it was just kind of a one-off. Although it might have kind of stemmed the tide of increasing activism at work. It was just getting more and more and more.
That's possible. And it may be,
or at least maybe
emboldening some companies to strengthen their policies on this a little bit, but not necessarily to go as boldly as these two companies have.
Right. Or at least tell people what they should be doing, what they want them to be doing.
Right, to give more clarity.
Yeah.
That's very possible, but also would be much, much more difficult to track and to measure. It makes it real easy and clean to tally up the numbers when you get a definitive statement from, you know, from the CEO or from the management team like this.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. But
something to watch.
So if that story wasn't right-wing enough, we've got a Trump book or Trump Twitter. How do you make a Trump Twitter?
Twitter?
Trumper. That's right.
See, when you put this in the show notes, I was confused because I thought Trump was releasing a new book, which I hadn't heard anything about.
Right. That doesn't face Trump. Face, no, it doesn't work. Anyway, this Trump media social network thing is called Truth Social. So this is now we're jumping to the Wall Street Journal now, but we're grabbing from the big papers. Where's my stories from the Post? There's no stories from the Post today. Woe is us.
We're being much more serious and high class than the New York Post today.
You know what? When this show makes it big, we will have our Post delivered and it will be right here in the middle of the table every time. We do need a staff, I think. I think we need someone to come in and keep us organized and, do some research for us. I feel like that would make our lives a lot easier here.
The child labor laws prohibit me from offering up my children at this point.
Okay. Well, maybe
in New Hampshire, that's okay.
Maybe you could move a couple towns north and maybe New Hampshire will change their child labor laws. That could be likely. Or maybe you could just drive them here and then they're free to work. There's nothing you can do.
you will pay them in snacks.
Yeah.
So the Wall Street Journal.
Right. Okay. So former President Donald Trump's planned digital media venture could quickly become a serious competitor in a crowded field of right-leaning sites and social networks, thanks to Mr. Trump's prominence and online following. It has a quote from him, but now I'm going to do the voice. Okay, I'm just going to say it, but okay. Everyone asks me, why doesn't someone stand up to big tech? Well, we will be soon, Mr. Trump, the chairman of Trump Media. Nobody knows what he is. Who's Mr. Trump? We got to explain who he is. All right, said in a statement Wednesday, the deal wouldn't affect his ability to run for the White House again in 2024 if he chooses. Hold on. I'm still amazed that the Wall Street Journal's tagline for him is Mr. Trump, the chairman of Trump Media and Technology Group. That must be some journalistic.
Let's be generous.
Yeah.
Normally, well, did they say in a previous sentence former President Trump?
Oh yes, they did.
So they already called that out. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they're just clarifying that not only is he involved in this venture, but that this is his specific role within.
So he's going to be the chairman of this thing, Trump Media and Technology Group. Okay,
which sounds like confusing. That's potentially a new company because what I'm blanking on the name of. The Trump business's overarching corporation. I'm assuming the Trump empire has.
Yeah, I don't know.
But whatever the thing was that he wasn't supposed to be running when he was in the White House his sons were overseeing.
Okay, so the deal wouldn't affect his ability to run for the White House in 2024. There are no laws preventing him from continuing to run our own businesses while he's a presidential candidate or serve as president. If he wins another term. Okay. Truth Social.
So there was a quote I threw in there.
Yeah, there's a quote you threw in. What's that from?
Let me give some backstory. So there was some comments made, some parallels drawn that this social network is being called Truth.
Right.
Which, given how much discussion there was of Russian collusion back in 2016 had some echoes with a certain journalistic enterprise in Soviet Russia that the older listeners among us might be familiar with, Pravda, which literally translates to as truth.
I just know it as people say, like, oh, you know, Pravda would be proud at what the mainstream media is doing now.
So that was actually the state media outlet. And there were two
CNN compared to Pravda.
There were two media outlets in the Soviet Union at that point. And I think technically one was run by the state and one was run by the Communist Party or something.
Okay.
And
Pravda. So
there
I see it here.
There was Pravda and I don't know how to pronounce it.
Izvestia?
That's how it sounds. Right. Yeah. So Pravda was truth and Izvestia was news. And the witty saying was that there's no truth in Pravda and there's no news in Izvestia. the fact that they had to call it that means that it's probably the opposite. And there's been some similar witty takes on Trump's attempt to enter the social media market, that if they're calling it truth, really?
Well, I mean, yes, but then there's also the fact checkers on Twitter and Facebook that say you can't say there's a lab leak and all that, which is, anyway, let's go on. We're going to force ourselves.
Let's drill down to the actual content.
No, because we're going to force ourselves. I'm going to force you to make a predictions. So the company didn't disclose many details about the look and feel of Truth Social, which is expected to become available to select users next month and launch broadly early next year. Screenshots of the mobile app from a company presentation in Apple Inc.'s App Store. Ooh, I wonder how long that'll last. Show a user interface very similar to that of Twitter and other social media platforms. So, okay. So,
is there much about the backbone? Because I saw somewhere that maybe it was somehow tied to Mastodon, but I don't know if that's actually true.
I'm going to do a quick search on that because we didn't search social Mastodon. Because if it's part of Mastodon, that's kind of a big deal.
So on the one hand, if this is a typical Trump enterprise, it wouldn't surprise me that they haven't thought this through at all and are just kind of winging it. And it's going to end at Four Seasons lawn care.
Oh, yeah. So Mastodon's founder says Trump's new social network is just Mastodon. Truth Social, wait a minute, is seemingly using Mastodon's code base without credit. I don't know. I mean, isn't the whole idea of Mastodon that it's like federated so anyone can...
I don't know enough about exactly what Truth Social is doing here or about how Mastodon is supposed to work.
Yeah.
It's possible that they're just trying to distance themselves from Trump because tying their themselves to his bandwagon probably wouldn't be great for the brand. I'd like to think that if the people behind Truth Social are actually serious about this, that they've given some significant thought to, you know, what happened to, was it Parler, and other social media. And so they're trying to make it as resilient and robust as possible and not dependent on, the whims of payment processors or, Amazon Web Services or other things that could pull the rug out from under them. And that maybe looking to Mastodon was a first step in that right direction. But I wouldn't bet money on them doing it right.
Right. Like it seems like it's just a clone. And I'm a little bit like, I guess the question I have written here, what do we think? Successful? What will this look like? The Wall Street Journal is worried about competition from the other kind of related, like the Blaze and Daily Wire. I don't think that's a problem. I think they all kind of link together just fine.
Well, but if we're talking about Blaze and Daily Wire, those are media outlets,
right?
Less social.
I think the idea is this is also
because there
be
was
media.
All sorts of talk about when he was in the process of leaving the White House, that he was going to start a new media empire, Trump News. And so maybe this is a merger of those two ideas.
Right. So I don't think this replaces Twitter. I think Twitter had a role in creating it in that they banned Trump. But I think it will avoid some of the mistakes of Parler and Gab. Gab is terrible because they just, you saw those anti-Semitic tweets that they put out and then deleted. And then but anyway, and Gab also runs the Mastodon code base, but the rest of the Federation has blocked them off.
They're embargoed.
They're basically embargoed. Yeah. Now I don't think it sounds like they're cloning the code. They're not actually trying to join the Federation here. So it's maybe they probably should, but I guess they're not. So I don't think they're trying to do anything clever. Technically, they're just trying to take something that exists and building it's going to be kind of a cross between like a Twitter and a media outlet, I think, because
the challenge to answering your question,
it's not going to be, I think it could be impactful. It's not going to be like, it's not going to challenge big tech, but it could be impactful on the periphery and provide an outlet to Donald Trump, for which, admit it, there is going to be a large demand for.
Well, yeah. So no matter where Donald Trump ends up, if he is regularly putting out press releases or whatever format his musings are going to take, there are a lot of people whose business card says journalist that are going to be following that very closely.
It seems like he's found the formula, because he criticized Colin Powell as part of his eulogy, or obituary, which it worked for him with McCain. So that it seems like he's repeating that, and maybe not a very nice thing to do, but also, you know, it's the one way to break through there.
Well, I'll say one thing for Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
When he finds something that he thinks works, he hammers that over and over again. You know, you saw it with the nicknames, that he'll try a couple until he gets something that gets a reaction from the crowd, and then that will stick. And he will use it over and over again.
It's so, like Crooked Joe? No, Sleepy Joe. Sleepy Joe, that's a good one.
Like most stand-up comics, and maybe he isn't that far off from that in his professional sense. He tries out his material in a small venue. He workshops it a little bit, and then when he gets it good and going, when he's got a tight 15 minutes, he takes that on the road and he runs with it.
Great. All right. So I think I gave my prediction on how this is going to look.
Well, I'm going to hedge because the general question you asked was, you know, will it be successful? And I don't know what success looks like for this. I mean, are we just talking like, will it still be around in a year's time? I put decent odds on that. I think you're right to say that it's not going to supplant any of the major. It's certainly not the quote mainstream social media. We're not going to see Facebook or Twitter or I don't know, Instagram quaking in their boots over this. This isn't going to supplant them. It might give, you know, Gab or MeWe is Parler actually back up and running now?
But I don't think it's very big.
It might give some of those a run for their money,
I think.
Yeah, I haven't been following it that closely, but
and Mastodon itself too. I mean,
yeah, he brings a lot of name recognition and notoriety, and he could theoretically jumpstart some network effects. But I don't think if it has a massive success, it's going to be a massive success in a niche area of the social media market.
Yeah, he's not thinking in terms of like a tech investor or VC.
Yeah, I think this is much more valuable in that it allows him to have a platform that everybody else is going to be talking about whatever is said there. Yeah. Even if membership is literally, you know, his 10,000 biggest donors / closest friends and all the news people who want to know what's going on there.
I think what Donald Trump does a lot in his career is he tries a lot of different things. And some of them stick. Like, you know, a lot of Trump critics like to point out, like, everything he does goes bankrupt. Well, but Trump that's stakes. Not true. Yeah. But it's just like, it's not true. There's a lot of things you could point out to that didn't work, but it's kind of part of the process. So this could be just one thing that he throws against the wall that then next month we could find. Actually, he's not doing that. He's doing this other thing. So that's totally possible.
Yeah, well, the other angle of this is the financial piece of it, which I guess this what was the name of the company of which he's the chairman?
Oh, he's
Trump
the chairman,
Media something.
Trump Media and Technology Group.
Yeah, so the Truth Social or I don't know if it's Trump Media and Technology Group or specifically Truth Social. One of those is being has been brought public through a SPAC, a special acquisition corporation, which means that now you can buy and sell shares in it. It's got an acronym name that has nothing to do with Trump, because the way those are set up is basically they're empty shells, and then you slot a company into them later. But I don't know if we talked a little bit about SPACs before. The controversy on them is that. It allows.
Probably do a whole episode on that.
Oh yeah, there's a lot to be said there. Yeah, but the main thing is that it's kind of an end run or you know, a way to kind of go under the radar. You don't have to go through the normal IPO process because you've got a company that's already done all that legwork and is ready for you to show up. They, you know, you merge with them or they buy you and then take that public. So there's been some talk, you know, is this a get rich quick scam slash money laundering for the Trump organization, a way for them to just pump some money into their coffers by taking what they're going to fold in a couple of months as a failed, social media technology venture. But after they've all sold off all their stock and made their millions, to which my initial response was, and how is that different than every other SPAC? Other than the fact that, there's a, Hollywood villain, at the helm here in the personage of, Donald Trump.
All right. Well, this is fascinating, and it's going to continue to be the personalities in the news are never boring in the early 2020s here. All right. To finish the show today, I want to kind of do a little preview of something that I want to talk about in the future. In an effort to witness the development of my thinking on technical products, I want to go back to a three-part blog post that I wrote all the way back in 2016 called Passive Computing. And this was in the heyday of chatbots when I was working on the MarsBot application, which was a chatbot at the time.
Before MarsBot Audio.
Yeah, and it was almost 2 years before I started this podcast, Local Maximum. And I actually started the blog post with Chris Dixon's observation, who's a venture capitalist, his observation that there are insightful one. His observation.
Has he been on the podcast before?
No, I'm trying to get. I really want him on the podcast, but we'll see. He might be too big for me. But his observation is that there are eras in computing, such as like the mobile era and the broadband era and all that. And so I wanted to dream up a new era. What's next? So I called it passive computing. And the idea is where there are agents in the background, you agree to it, which look out for your interest and turn on when needed. And it was written, it's really interesting. I just kind of want to read it and we should respond to each paragraph in real time. That's how I see this going. It's written, it's good. It's written with such a naivete of 2016. It's like, wow, technology enables me to do so many things at once and be so much more productive, which now doesn't feel as good anymore. But I think at one point I predicted the AirPods, so that's pretty cool. I'd like to go through that soon, and I think there's a lot we can learn about that, and we could see how smart I used to be. So that's going to be fun. All right. So usually we have a theme. I don't think we really have a theme today, because how are you going to pull together Vikings and Trump and Coinbase and all that?
That's the only thread through that is maybe some right of center ideology there, because
Vikings.
You can say that the Vikings are a thing that people on the far right like to hang their hat on. It's no fault of the Vikings, but yeah.
I mean, if you look at the Scandinavia today,
that was something that what was the name of the book you mentioned? Was it the Sacred Heart?
Yeah,
that I think they talk about a little bit, how the misappropriation of much of that culture, that there's a lot for descendants of that lineage to be proud of.
I think it's Viking Heart.
And it's Viking Heart. Yeah. Thank you. That is not necessarily the thing that a lot of skinheads and people getting Norse tattoos are ascribing to.
Yeah, well, I mean, I listened to an interview of the author, and he was talking about how like the far right, the Nazis in like the 1930s, could not get a foothold in Scandinavia, and they thought they would be able to, but you know they weren't able to. But anyway, I don't think that's a different kind of right than how is that? You see, this is the problem where they're like the right wing includes a company saying that they don't want people doing politics on. Company time and neo-fascist. They're two totally different things.
Somewhere and just say everything on this side of it is
everyone is not a socialist,
right? Then you tend to lump some things together that would not necessarily be considered the same.
Yeah, no, I don't like this one. I think I want to do a different. I want to find a different theme. I think the theme is just okay. I can't include the Viking thing on this theme. Other than dating things. I don't know. the continuing development of the tech ecosystem and where our society is going. I feel like that's what we always talk about, isn't it? No, but this is a good, this is a good
recurring
example.
Theme.
This is a good example, though. It's like everything that we're building, all of the connections between humans that, you know, we have in our large companies, particularly Coinbase, which is a cryptocurrency company. It's a Bitcoin company. And our social media, which is both decentralizing and also becoming like, you know, if you start a new cable news channel, you're not inventing new tech. You're just like, I think that's kind of the equivalent of what Trump is doing here. He's not inventing new tech. He's just starting a new cable news channel, essentially. But I feel like that action is caused by the development of the ecosystem elsewhere, the politicization of the ecosystem in on Twitter and Facebook and other areas. And so you could see kind of the secondary and tertiary effects of the centralization of tech in these news stories. That is the theme. I think that's a good one. I think I nailed it. Now we just have to work the Vikings in there or carbon tree dating, and we're all good. But I think that was just a fun human interest one. So, all right. I think I'm going to declare victory and say we're out. Any last thoughts?
I'm not going to fight you on that. There's one little news tidbit that I'm going to throw out there. Not something we're going to go into depth on today, but something to watch in the future. Is that there's been some talk about Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg rebranding the company or the parent company with a focus on the metaverse. And that's something we've talked a little bit about in the past. And so I'm going to be keeping an eye on that and seeing whether that actually comes through or if that was just a test balloon they floated to see what people thought of that.
But, well, remember when they were going to start a currency?
Right.
That was another one predicted.
Which is still something being worked on. Just not they're not.
Yeah, it's in way
direct
later.
Control over it as it seemed like they would initially. Yeah.
All right. Very cool. Yes, we should definitely look into that. We could probably do a whole episode of the metaverse and a whole episode in SPACs. So you're getting lots of ideas here. So, all right. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support the Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week. Feel the power.